This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. Join us for a discussion on the commodity markets and continued volatility in 2022 and beyond during Dakota Fest. This is Jesse Allen, Farm and Ranch Director for the American Ag Network and host of Market Talk. Join us as we discuss the commodity markets during Dakota Fest on Wednesday, August 17th at 1 p.m. in the Reeves Education Center. I'll be joined by Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing and Mike Miner of Professional Ag Marketing. That's Wednesday, August 17th at 1 p.m. during Dakota Fest.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
We saw a bit of a mixed bag in the ag commodities and livestock as we wrapped up the trading week on Friday. Welcome into Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us. Once again, I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here. Thanks for being with us as we take a look at what is happening in the market, trade, and more here on Market Talk each and every weekday. And a interesting way to wrap up the week on Friday with a mostly mixed bag, we'll call it, with a lot of issues surrounding the market trade. We are going to talk about all of that coming up here as we work through today's program, including a jobs report that came out on Friday that was much higher than expected. That was a big headwind, along with a surging U.S. dollar to the market trade. We're going to discuss that, the U.S.-China issues continuing over Taiwan, the weather and its role in the market trade currently, all that and more coming up as we are going to have a discussion with Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing, joining us here on Market Talk for the first time. Look forward to catching up with Naomi here a little bit later on in the show today. Segments 2 and 3, we're going to catch up with her. Also coming up at the end of the show today, we're going to start our mini crop tour, so to speak, as we travel around the country here the next couple of episodes of Market Talk. We're going to start where there is a bit of an area of drought that is of concern. Northwest Iowa, Southwest Minnesota, Northeast Nebraska, Southeast South Dakota. We're going to talk to Syngenta's Wally West. He is an agronomist in that region, and we're going to hear his thoughts about what the crops are looking like, how to deal with some of that crop stress and more. That's coming up here on Market Talk. First up, though, I talked with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, around mid-session on Friday to get Arlen's thoughts and analysis on Friday's market action and what we were seeing wrapping up the week of trade. And I asked Arlen first if he thought that jobs number that came out higher than expected was a major impact on the trade or not. Here's what Arlen had to say.
It really did. It led fund managers to start rethinking their investment strategies and what they were doing. We'd been pretty much in a rotation of money out of the commodities, except for where there was a weather story in some of the ag commodities, on ideas that it's a recession time, and that means lower demand for commodities. And crude oil had been leading the way down, along with gasoline prices, etc. But this morning's jobs report showing that the economy created over 500,000 jobs last month, more than twice as many as what was anticipated by analysts. And that even what they anticipated would have been good for a recession suggests that maybe we're not so much in a recession, that the economy may be stronger than what they think, particularly after the JOLTS report last week showed 10.7 million job postings openings. And so the economy being stronger, maybe there is some demand for those commodities. So as a result, we saw money start to rotate back into the commodities, crude oil and much of the rest of the energy complex rallying. We saw corn leading the way higher as in spread trading as traders unwound corn-soybean spreads that have been put on over the last 10 days or so. The dollar rallied sharply on that jobs report. That created some headwinds for wheat. It tried to rally with corn, but just wasn't able to sustain the strength and still trying to compete. Soybeans on the short end of the corn-soybean spreads, but still getting some support from some weather concerns going into the coming week, as well as some new sales to China overnight.
Yeah, and looking a little bit more at that soy complex as well, I noticed some spreading even within soybeans between old crop and new crop contracts. Meal looks like it's giving back some profit here today after hitting new high levels. Bean oil looking strong. You mentioned those China sales. One has to wonder what those could look like moving forward. Will we see more China sales or not with all the tensions there? I think that is something that maybe the trade still could be questioning. Would you agree?
I would agree. We did have the sales overnight, but tensions are definitely increasing with China. Seems like each day that goes, we're seeing higher tensions escalating as China fires live missiles crossing over Taiwan territory, over the island nation, and really clamping down harder on Taiwan and including more sanctions and restrictions on others as well. Going forward, I think another thing going to be watching is we've seen quite a bit of risk premium put on in recent days over the weather, and some of the European weather model shows some good chances of rains that could really help save some soybean yields in the western Midwest if they verify this weekend. So another thing to watch, whether we get those rains and those relations with China and whether that costs us demand in the new marketing year.
And over in livestock trade, we've seen us steadily go from red to green numbers through Friday's action. What do you make of what's going on in the protein sector to wrap up the week?
Yeah, most of our strength is in the live cattle complex. The live cattle and feeder cattle this morning, feeder cattle leading the way, even with the firmer corn prices, we're seeing that rebound. And ideas that product demand will be stronger as we go down the road with a stronger economy. Beef demand has been good. Pork demand has been good from the consumer. We've already been seeing the consumer start to come back in for some of those higher cuts of meat. That's been supported. This week's cash trade was a little higher than expected. And another thing to note is we look at cow slaughter continues to be very high. And in fact, the latest weekly slaughter data is showing 82,000 head of cows slaughtered during the week. That's the second largest total we've seen so far this year. So we're expecting contraction of those on feed numbers as we start getting into the fourth quarter of this year, and especially as we get into next year. And that looks like that trend's going to continue.
Again, that's Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX with Market Analysis. I chatted with Arlen around mid-session on Friday. A news story I wanted to highlight here in the world of agriculture. Since 2007, North and South Dakota had a large share of prevent plant claims. University of Illinois' Farm Doc Daly says those states accounted for 35% of U.S. corn and soybean prevent plant acres versus 9% and 12% respectively of total acres planted to corn and soybeans. Compared with other North Central states, average planting progress on the first date that prevent plant could be taken is notably slower in these two states. Now, FarmDoc says this finding implies that farmers in North and South Dakota have more of an opportunity to opt for prevent plant, prompting a significant insurance policy question. Should prevent plant first decision day be set so that the normal planting progress rate is the same for all areas when it's time to make the prevent plant decision? Evidence suggests that the prevent plant acres would drop in both states if the first decision day occurred later. That's a very interesting report from the University of Illinois' Farm Doc Daily, and it's something that I definitely think could be up for discussion. Well, again, coming up, we are going to focus on the market trade as we wrapped up the week. We're going to talk with Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. She will join the show for the first time coming up next as we're back with more market talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to discuss the market trade as we wrap up the first week of August, we welcome in Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing, joining us today. Naomi, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us on Market Talk. How are you?
Oh, doing great. And thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I know first time we've been able to connect, so I'm glad we found some time for you to be on the show here today. And you know, it's been a wild week in the markets again. The volatility is still there. We have a lot to probably discuss, I think, here today. But, you know, overall, looking at Friday's session to wrap up the week, to me, markets just felt kind of tired. I know there was a lot of news items out there, but it just it felt like kind of a meh, ho-hum sort of day. Is that the general feeling you got on Friday's trade, or was there something else you were thinking after just looking at the closes?
Yeah, a little bit of profit taking to start the morning, especially with weather forecasts still showing chances of rain for next week. Overall, though, looking into next week, when we've got that USDA report Friday, grain markets might be stuck in a little bit of a short-term sideways consolidation pattern. Right now, we don't have any reasons to just break out higher or even, you know, retest some of the recent highs that we had, nor do we have a reason to fall apart lower for the short term here. So I think kind of stuck is what we have. And the markets reflected that today with some quiet two-sided trade action.
Yeah, I noticed as well, you know, looking at corn had a pretty good day today. It felt like a little spread trading between corn and soybeans on Friday. You know, we think about the weather issues and some folks out there think the corn crop's made. I think that could be debated. We still have grain fill, et cetera. But you look at this corn market, to me, you mentioned a sideways range. It's kind of felt like it's been holding around this $6 level for a little while now. What are your thoughts in this corn market?
Yeah, definitely some sideways trading pattern. $6 support area seems to hold. $6.25 as resistance. Overall, we're still not able to get back above that long-term uptrend. We're still below it just a little bit. And the market's trying to understand exactly where the yield is at. As you said, you know, we're dealing with Western Corn Belt yields, which are going to be below average. Central part of the grain belt is going to probably be okay. And now we've got, you know, bad things happening with too much rain in other places too. So it's a very big question as far as where the yield is going to end up. I would say it's definitely not necessarily a record crop out there, but it's not a disaster. So with next week's USDA report, what I'm really curious to see is where they put the acreage for corn. Because remember, on this August report, they don't usually touch acres on this August report. But of course, on that June 30th planted acres report summary, they said we're going to resurvey farmers in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So we're going to see those numbers on Friday. And that is going to be something to be watching. Yield, acres. We're going to have to keep an eye on global production, probably a decrease for the European crop and an increase for the Brazil corn crop. And, you know, ultimately, when all is said and done, it's going to end up only mattering where they have the ending stocks for the U.S. and the world. If the ending stocks are getting smaller, then we have every reason in the world for prices to stay firm and supported for now. But if by chance they make those ending stocks a little bit bigger, then we might see a little bit more pressure for prices until we find our harvest low.
Well, you mentioned the resurvey in the Dakotas and Minnesota, and staying on that trend a little bit, you know, on this past Monday's crop progress report, we saw a big jump in North Dakota corn condition. I posed this question earlier this week. I said, I wonder if that's maybe a smaller, you know, set of numbers there because we lost some corn acreage in North Dakota. I know you talk to farmers across the country. I mean, we look and wonder about that resurvey. Have you heard anything? Was there a big shift in acres across the Dakotas and Minnesota that we really need to watch out for?
Well, it's a big question mark for me because, you know, as I was talking to farmers in the spring, they were saying, well, I'm really thinking about doing prevent plant acres. And then it seemed like maybe they were pushing it in at the last minute. And some said, no, for sure, I did take the prevent plant. So I got to be honest, I don't have a clue where these numbers are going to end up next week. So your guess is as good as mine. And as far as the condition of the crop, as far as what is there and what's growing, of course, we know it's behind because it got planted late. But I'm not hearing my guys complain about the crop. So when they're not being vocal, that usually means things are okay.
Well, looking at soybeans, let's shift our discussion there a little bit. Friday's trade, a little spreading, it felt like, even in beans itself between old and new crop. China stepping in, buying soybeans. That rumor hit the trade Thursday, and then You know, we got it confirmed on Friday, China and unknown, although we presume that was China. I think a little surprising considering the way tensions are between the U.S. and China right now over Taiwan. What are your thoughts on those sales and just how the bean market performed on Friday?
Yeah, I would agree with you. You know, I think we were maybe anticipating that China would potentially back away because of the strife with Taiwan. So it was encouraging that they did come in and buy. So it gives us a little bit of hope that the exports to China will remain as strong as they've been. You have to also remember that we're getting into that time of year where China does come back to our marketplace because we're getting closer to harvest. So they want to gobble up as many supplies as they can while prices are usually getting to be at the lower end of trading ranges heading into the harvest low. So I was definitely encouraged by it. I thought it was a good thing and was supportive for prices and is what's able to keep that November soybean price definitely over $14 as we finish the week.
Now, the meal market, that has been a really strong point here. Friday, obviously down. Was that a case of just some profit taking, do you think, heading to the weekend?
Yeah, definitely profit taking into the weekend. But you're right. You know, the soybean meal was something that, you know, I'll be honest, it flew under my radar. I wasn't really keeping an eye on it. I was more focused on soybeans. And then earlier this week when Poland came in and bought soybean meal, I was like, what? You know, what's going on with this marketplace? But of course, they had been, I'm sure, probably getting most of their needs from Ukraine, you know, someone logistically close to them. And when, you know, the Ukraine strife is still there, it makes sense that they're turning some of their attention to the United States. But it had definitely been, I think it was somewhere between 5 and 10 years, the last time that they had bought from the United States for soybean meal. So it was a nice purchase. And then it got me thinking more, well, you know, that herd in China, their hog herd is almost back to normal levels. So they're going to be needing feed and just the demand for soybean meal will be there. And of course, we're going to hopefully have good news for soybean meal and soybean oil as far as our bioproducts that we have. So we will have some soybean meal to sell to the world. And it's nice to see that that price has been inching higher.
And bean oil as well, Friday's trade, a little bit of a recovery in crude oil, and I think maybe even some unwinding of the meal oil spread possibly there with bean oil moving higher on Friday.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happened there, because it does seem like when you're trading soybean meal, you're always kind of talking about soybean oil as well. So I think they are connected that way. And then you're right with the crude oil market. You know, that's one that's been inching lower, and crude oil prices tested the 200-day moving average yesterday and today. And it does feel like maybe crude oil prices are going to find some short-term support here. But overall, you know, that's a trend that's really started to work lower, as the ideas, of course, are that supplies from OPEC are going to be slowly building. And maybe the fear that with recession talk here in the U.S. and around the world, that maybe demand starts to falter a little bit. So that's a market to keep an eye on going forward, too.
Now, just in general, we look at corn and soybeans here real quick, you know, thinking about where the levels are at right now, especially new crop. I mean, you know, a little over six in December corn, a little over 14 in November beans. It feels like a good spot to protect some downside risk here, especially with a report coming up on this next Friday.
Yeah, I agree with you. And my bias for commodities has shifted to more defensive. I've been really bullish the last couple of years, but ever since I saw the Goldman Sachs commodity index start to show some bigger topping signals and with recession talk and inflation talk, I'm definitely more cautious. It just feels like commodities maybe are getting a little bit tired. And if the United States on the report next week ends up showing that our supplies are a little bit larger, or if global supplies are a little bit larger or our ending stocks are growing, that's going to just continue to weigh on the market and prices. Seasonally, usually the month of August is when soybean prices and corn prices push lower. And we don't usually find our harvest low until early to mid-September. So I'm with you. I think being defensive heading into that report is probably the right strategy.
And again, that's Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing, joining us here today on Market Talk. We're going to get back to our conversation with Naomi coming up after the break. A look at Friday's closing numbers. September quarter up 8, 610 at a quarter. December quarter up 3 3/4 at 610. Soybeans August down a quarter penny, 1614 at 3/4. November beans down 9, 1408 and 3/4. Bean meal August, that was down 1460 a ton, 499.10. Soybean oil for August up 250. 55.6859. Chicago wheat September down 6 3/4, 775 3/4. September KC wheat 12 lower, 848 1/4. Spring wheat September that was down 7 3/4, 886 1/2. Livestock August live cattle up 17, 137.87. October fats up 22, 143.87. August feeder cattle up 45, 179.52. September up 85, 183.42. Lean hogs August up 17, 120.82. October up 80 at 98.40. We'll get back to Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing right after this. Back with more Market Talk after the break.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thank you for being with us again here today. We are having a conversation with Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing. Naomi, let's look as well at the cash market real quick, cash basis for corn, soybeans mainly. You know, we're still seeing basis hold relatively firm in many areas. Eastern Belt, Western Belt, seeing some differences there. But overall, you look at basis, what are your thoughts, any thoughts with what we're seeing right now in the cash market?
You're right. Basis for the most part has been firm. In some places, it's strong. Cash markets always usually tell the truth as far as what's going on out in the countryside. So going into the next few weeks, as the bins are getting swept out, I'm very curious to see what basis does, most likely like late August into September, because last year it stayed strong, it got stronger. And then even at harvest time, basis was staying strong. So that was our cue to know that the end users were really depleted of supplies and the farmers didn't have it. So that is what I'm really wanting to watch over the next few weeks to know, is the grain really out there or not? Or are supplies actually in the countryside smaller than what we were being told? So cash market always tells the truth, and the basis staying strong is something that we need to watch, because it could be maybe more of a truthful indicator that our supplies are tighter than we think. And then again, we'll see what the USDA says next week, Friday, and then we'll have to compare the two in the following weeks.
Let's talk the wheat market, Naomi. Fairly quiet day, it felt like, on Friday. I would have to think that surging U.S. dollar was just a big headwind there for all three wheat classes. What are your thoughts, though, with where this wheat market's at right now? We've obviously taken a lot out of it here in recent weeks with everything going on, the different moves in the market. So you look at wheat as a whole right now. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's cheap. I think it's almost undervalued. You know, now you can talk about the wheat and corn ratio. And now wheat is cheap enough that you could potentially suggest you could use it as a substitute for feed. So I'm wondering, and I'm hoping, if we see U.S. wheat exports pick up in the coming weeks. But of course, that market is kind of tempered right now with thoughts that whatever grain is in Ukraine is slowly getting shipped out. So wheat prices might just be stuck in that sideways consolidation pattern until we could just have a little bit more time to know what the quality is of that grain that's coming out of Ukraine. I mean, if it's nasty and rotten and nobody's really actually going to want it, well, then you got a different story to be talking about. But we're not going to know that for a couple more weeks yet. And we'll see what the USDA says for Ukraine and Russia on the report next week, and also European supplies. So wheat will be taking its cues from the USDA report from the global standpoint.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Europe as well. We've had issues there. We've had issues with Argentina's wheat crop. Spring wheat in the U.S. looks pretty good right now, but then, you know, winter wheat planting is going to start up here in a few weeks, and there's a lot of producers who are worried about it being very dry in the southern plains right now. So I definitely think there's some issues ahead still for this wheat market, as you alluded to, Naomi.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up about the winter wheat and planting starting, because you hit the nail on the head. When you look at that drought monitor index, it is parched soil conditions. And if I was a producer down there, I don't know that I would have the courage to even plant it. So, thank you for bringing that up. Now I have something else to watch.
Well, sometimes I do my homework, but let's segue out of the wheat market here. Just talk the macro side of the picture as well. I mentioned the dollar moving higher. We got a jobs report out Friday that was much higher than expected, and obviously have the inflation worries, the recession talk. When you look at the whole macro picture, I'd love just your perspective on how that's weighing into our ag commodities, livestock, et cetera, right now.
I think it's the kind of the sleeping thing right now that the market is ignoring from the standpoint of, you know, inflation is still high, interest rates are going to go up. And with the jobs report today, you know, at first glance, it was encouraging news, but then trade spun it and they said, no, that just means that the inflation isn't working and that the interest rates are going to have to go higher yet for the next Fed meeting. And so the stock market then worked lower because of that spin that the traders were taking with it. So, you know, the last time that we had this kind of a situation, you know, I'm just thinking back to like the big crashes of 2008. I'm thinking back to the recession of 2008. And where I live in Wisconsin is it's a really cool town. The town is called Fond du Lac, and it's a mix of blue collar and white collar and farming community. And so we have Mercury Marine boat engines here. And so when we start to see, you know, the boating industry falter, and we're starting to see the camper industry falter for those who live in Indiana, they know that. That's where I'm starting to get nervous. And so my town, when I'm still driving around, the restaurant parking lots are still full, but I'm starting to see my peer group, and I hang with a variety of folks, they're scaling back. And so I'm thinking that it's coming. And my fear is if we start to see these companies lay off workers, because right now people can hang with it. They're dealing with the higher prices. They're making cutbacks in other places. But if people start to lose the jobs, I think you're going to just see the dominoes fall. And that is what I'm freaked out about, for lack of better expression. I'm very nervous about that, because that would be something that I think would start to hit the market more like in 2023. And then we see the wheels fall off the bus. And so that's just my perspective. You know, when I'm in the grocery store, I'm super nosy. I'm looking in people's shopping carts to see what they're buying. And people are definitely scaling back. They're doing different kinds of substitutes for what they're purchasing. So I'm noticing things from a female perspective. And I think that the worst is yet to come.
Well, that is a great segue into the livestock sector for us, Naomi. Before we run out of time, I want to talk about that. You hit the nail on the head. I think I'm seeing some of the same things too in the grocery store. I mean, consumer demand, you know, we talk about it, a lot more ground beef, a lot more pork, you know, a lot less steaks, a lot less chicken, et cetera. But, you know, we look at the cattle and the hog markets, the protein complex as a whole, obviously with all the recession fears, demand taking a bit of a hit, that's something that's going to be a significant weight, I feel like, here moving forward in the protein sector.
Yeah. And when you think back a few years, the last time that we had real high cattle prices going into 2014-15, we saw demand falter a little bit because of the price being high at the store, but we weren't in a recession at that time. We had come out of the recession. So now if we have a combination of high cattle prices because we're going to be seeing, you know, smaller herd numbers, I'm very curious how that would time out with a recession if it were to happen in 2023, and then you see people really pull back. So that's something that might be new to the market. If we have the recession actually happen, we probably do see the pullback on beef demand here in our country. And that maybe helps to offset the fact that we will have smaller production going into 2023. So that's going to be a delicate tightrope to balance in the coming months.
And that's a great point you made, because I've talked to a lot of folks who said, I'm bullish the cattle market into the fourth quarter. I'm bullish. This herd's going to shrink. But if that scenario plays out, you mentioned, one has to wonder just how bullish this cattle market really could get at already elevated prices.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, hopefully we see some good holiday demand. And then after the new year, we'll see what mm-hmm. happens after that.
Definitely. Hog market as well. That August contract, I've talked about this quite a bit. It's just been on a tear. It's like a freight train running out of control, pretty much in line with the cash index with about a week to go. Any thoughts in this hog market as a whole? Is there anything different here than the cattle market right now?
Well, I think, you know, you probably covered the story quite well with what's happening with hogs. And, you know, the thing that I think of is that our American producers did a really good job of recognizing that over the past couple of years, the Chinese had been, you know, saying they're not going to be needing to import as much hogs. So our producers scaled back on production and we met that head on. And so we had a really nice mix of, you know, scaling back production so that way they wouldn't see like a big washout on prices. But I got to tell you, I'm befuddled by that whole August contract and how much it has just taken off like a rocket. So that's actually, you know, been really surprising to me. And I'm trying to, you know, keep an eye on the hogs for those deferred contracts. And like you said, I think we're going to actually end up seeing some more demand come in for pork because at the store, it still is a little bit cheaper. And we're getting also into the time of year where the weather's going to get a little bit cooler. So you've got the tail end of the grilling season, which is great for pork. And then you're also going into the time when people are going to be back at school. You're going to be putting pork in the crock pot. And then you have a nice meal at the end of the night. So I think you're going to see a double factor for demand for pork.
Well, fantastic stuff, Naomi. Before we wrap it up, I open it up. I'll open it up to you. Floor is yours. Any final thoughts you have for us today?
You know, I'm really cautious of that USDA report next week. There's going to be so many factors on it to be monitoring, and I don't know which aspect trade is going to bite onto the most. You know, it could be something where the USDA does a very clever supply and demand category where they make maybe, I don't know, corn friendly and beans bearish, and then we just don't know what to do. So the market is going to have some initial knee-jerk reactions, and then, of course, we're going to be finishing out the day heading into a weekend. So just be ready for anything next Friday. But I think my bias is still to protect for downside. Just that's where the bigger risk is right now.
Well, Naomi, I know you and the team there, Total Farm Marketing, fantastic folks. And if anyone needs advice, totalfarmmarketing.com, a great place to start. And with that, I will thank you for the time today. Thanks for joining us on Market Talk. We'll have to do this again soon.
I would love it. Thanks for having me.
And again, that is Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor with Total Farm Marketing, joining us here today on Market Talk. And great to have her on the show for the first time. It's long overdue to have a conversation with Naomi. So we thank her for making the time to join us here and recap the first week of August in the market trade. Coming up next, we're going to start our quote-unquote crop tour around the country. We're going to have a conversation with Wally West of Syngenta, looking at the crops in parts of the Western Corn Belt. That's on the way next as we're back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now here on Market Talk, we are going to start our trip around the country to get a look at crops and how things are faring in different areas of the U.S. Corn Belt. We're joined now by Wally West of Syngenta. Wally, great to catch up with you again, sir. How are you?
Well, thank you, Jesse. I'm doing very well. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us, Wally. I want to talk first about crop conditions in your neck of the woods, kind of looking northwest Iowa, southeast South Dakota, northeast Nebraska. That's been a spot that we've been seeing grow redder and redder on the drought monitor here the past few weeks. So catch us up. What are you seeing in the fields? What are you hearing from farmers in the region? How are things looking right now?
Ah, good. Excellent question, as always. So I would state, or I would believe the crop in the area that I watch closest is mostly eastern South Dakota, actually all of South Dakota, eastern South Dakota into southwest Minnesota, a little bit into northwest Iowa. Overall, the crop is average to just above average. There, as you mentioned, there is a bit of a hot spot around the Sioux City area. That seems to be missing some showers that stretches up into southeast South Dakota, maybe a little bit of corner of northeast Nebraska. So there certainly are some spots where the stresses, unfortunately, are kicking in. That's not anything really out of ordinary. It seems like this time of year, will last few years anyway, after 2019, where everywhere was wet. It's like ever since then, we've kind of been getting back into a bit of an average weather pattern where there's kind of the haves and have-nots when it comes to moisture.
Well, as we think about, you know, some of those maybe have-nots with a lack of moisture, Wally, one has to wonder, what are some stresses that we need to keep an eye out for? I mean, I've heard of things like, you know, pineappling corn, for instance, you know, some things like that. But as you look at some of those more drought-stressed crops, what are some things that farmers really need to keep an eye on right now?
Yeah, so stresses in general fall into two categories, two buckets, if you will. There are abiotic stresses and biotic stresses. Biotic, as is implied by the title, it's stress, it's crop stress in the form of a natural pathogen. It can be a weed, an insect, a disease. Those are all biotic stresses. On the other side, the other category is abiotic stresses, of which moisture stress is an abiotic stress. There are other abiotic stresses to our crops that can include compaction. That's an abiotic stress. Hail. That's an abiotic stress. Something is seemingly innocuous as cloud cover when corn is pollinating can be an abiotic stress. So generally, I'd like to lead off with that in any discussion about stress because, interestingly enough, there are certainly different ways to handle those two categories, but there are some similarities also in some of the products, some of the solutions to both biotic and abiotic stresses.
Well, as we look at things, I know we obviously saw a later planted crop this year, so everything's been slightly delayed, but I wonder, we've been seeing some spraying, you know, something like a fungicide, you know, an application here that could maybe help things out, help that plant health a little bit if we're still maybe trying to wait on some rains in some areas. Talk about that a little bit, Wally. What are some things we could maybe do?
Yeah, we'll do. So thinking about fungicides specifically, you know, back in the origins of fungicides, of which when you think about the innovation story around Syngenta, we were at the leading edge of the majority of the primary active ingredients that we use today in our industry around fungicides, so specifically fungicides. And the early days of those, they were specifically designed for a disease or a biotic stress management, in this case, fungal diseases. Fast forward to now, what we've learned through research and development, and specifically this relatively newer class of fungicides called the SDHI inhibitors, that they have benefits in the absence of disease. That's where the abiotic stress management comes in. For example, we know that a product like Miravis Neo and also Trivapro have benefits in the absence of disease, plant health benefits, if you will, and we know through research and development exactly how that works within the plant. One of the simplest ways to look at it, when you think about drought stress, for example, a corn plant and a soybean plant in particular, they're predisposed to transpirate, to move moisture from the soil up through the plant and out the leaves. A product like Miravis Neo, for example, can actually slow that transpiration and not at the expense of reducing the photosynthesis. That's the ability of the plant to produce starches and sugars and ultimately to protein, ultimately to grain yield. So it's really interesting what these products or a product like Miravis Neo can do, not only for the biotic stresses like disease management, but also the abiotic stresses, something as simple as helping mitigate drought stress.
Wally, I should have asked this as well a bit earlier in our discussion, but I'll ask it now. Any major disease pressures you're seeing in your region? Are we seeing anything like frog eye leaf spot or et cetera, et cetera?
Yes. Unfortunately, we are seeing just this morning, I came out of had a plot tour up in East Central South Dakota, and we did identify a light infestation of frog eye leaf spot that far north already. So it certainly is an excellent reminder that generally, speaking, when our soybean crop reaches kind of that R2, R3 stage, that's when we may see some frog eye leaf spot. We've seen it the last few years. It isn't always yield impacting, but it certainly is out there. And as diseases can happen, they certainly happen very rapidly in some cases. I'm hearing a few reports into Minnesota. I haven't personally seen it yet, but tar spot in southern Minnesota, it's another pathogen, a corn pathogen that we're keeping a sharp eye on. It tends to currently affect more the central and the in the Eastern Corn Belt, but we know from experience that it's almost like dropping a rock in a pond when it comes to disease pressure. It moves out from the point as that pathogen continues to grow and evolve. So we're keeping a sharp eye out for it, but so far so good. It's not in our immediate area.
Well, we appreciate the insight with that. Wally West of Syngenta, thanks so much for joining us today here on Market Talk.
Thank you, Jesse.
And again, that's Wally West of Syngenta. That's going to do it for Market Talk here today. Thanks so much for joining us as always. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic rest of your day.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Join us for a discussion on the commodity markets and continued volatility in 2022 and beyond during Dakota Fest. This is Jesse Allen, Farm and Ranch Director for the American Ag Network and host of Market Talk. Join us as we discuss the commodity markets during Dakota Fest on Wednesday, August 17th at 1 p.m. in the Reeves Education Center. I'll be joined by Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing and Mike Miner of Professional Ag Marketing. That's Wednesday, August 17th at 1 p.m. during Dakota Fest.